We talked earlier with former Formula One champion Jackie Stewart, now racing against time to find a cure for dementia. Another man whom fortune smiled on earlier in life is Peter Antonucci, our next guest. And he has parlayed his experiences into popular novels about the super rich set on a mega-sized sailing yacht. They float on a luxurious bubble away from the lives the rest of us lead. And there's always a market for reading about or peering into the lux life, as we know.
Exciting and new. Come aboard. We're expecting you.
It's claimed that American retirees find it economical, instead of going into a retirement village, to keep touring the world on cruise ships. Certainly it's a thing. Analysis on the Motley Fool website suggests that an American can cruise at a total cost of $30,000 a year, as opposed to $60,000 in a retirement facility, so long as they're in reasonable health, and it works better if you take long cruises, not lots of short ones. Cruising's bounced back post-pandemic and travellers have become younger. Consumer research suggests it's now very popular with millennials and Gen Xers. The ship, the world, sails way above that market, though. It's visited New Zealand, no doubt will again. It's 200 metres long and has 12 decks. It's big. The world is the world's most exclusive private residential ship. It ceaselessly, pretty much, circumnavigates the planet, eventually taking those on board to the places they've always wanted to visit. But it's not cheap. They reckon to afford it requires a net spendable worth of around 15 million New Zealand dollars. You buy one of 165 apartments. You have to be nominated by an existing resident to come on board. But you can take an introductory cruise. People already on board get to know you. And if they like you, you're in. It's a floating village. Peter Antonucci has owned four apartments on the world at various times. He is now a very successful author of luxury fiction. His titles include Billionaire's Paradise, Scandal at Sea, Billionaires in the Deep, and Tides of Betrayal. Peter, good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, and I'm thrilled to be on with you.
You were an award-winning litigator, I was reading, so you made money in the law, basically, and retired quite early.
Yes, that's right. I practiced law for a little less than 30 years. I was based out of New York City and retired at 52.
And since then, you've actually made it into the Guinness Book of World Records, among other achievements. How did you do that?
Well, I was sailing on the ship The World, which we'll be talking about, and we became the vessel that traveled the furthest south in the history of the planet, bypassing Shackleton, Edmondson, all the famous explorers that we learned about in school.
You now write books, and they've been optioned, so there'll be a big series coming out on your books. For those people who haven't read them yet, who've seen the streaming series The White Lotus and so on, your books are as spicy and scandalous as what's portrayed there?
I don't think that's entirely accurate. I think people have portrayed it as such. There is a certain amount of analogy between White Lotus and my books. There are an occasional murder in my book. But by and large, the books, like White Lotus, are stories of wealthy people getting together in some kind of a fantastic resort location or on a ship and doing things that we call it billionaires behaving badly.
Yes. And setting in a resort chain, not on board a ship, makes a big difference. But, you know, too much money, too much champagne, and sometimes too much libido, Peter.
Exactly. That is correct.
You were on board The World for 6 years. You owned a couple of apartments at one point. How much did that set you back, can I ask?
Well, it wasn't cheap. I think each apartment's maintenance was somewhere between $300,000 and $500,000 a year.
Gee. Well, I know you paid millions at times. Everybody does, apparently, for the bigger apartments. You came ashore in 2019. Good timing with the pandemic about to arrive. I'll bet that made for nervous times aboard The World.
It certainly did, and it was good timing on on my part, purely fortuitous. But if you did own an apartment on board the world while COVID was going on, you continued to pay your maintenance and you were not allowed to get on the ship. So it would be like paying rent in a condominium and not being allowed in the apartment.
Yeah, and a huge rent. So
And for about 16 months or 12 months, yes.
you need to have money, lots of it. Why did you call it quits in the end?
A couple of reasons. First and foremost, I had been on for 6 or 7 years and I traveled around the world several times, seen 106 countries, been to Antarctica, I think 4 times. So I've kind of been there and done that. And then the personality of the ship changed a little bit. It was always fun, but it became a little bit too, I'll say, catty for my taste, a little bit too gossipy. And it just it wasn't my cup of tea after a while.
Okay, so some of the decorum disappeared. I'll get back to that. By the way, did you get the chance to see much of New Zealand?
Oh, I did. I loved New Zealand. We're in Wellington. We're in the, and I'll probably butcher the name, the Wairarapa Valley.
Yeah. Yep, just
And
north. Yeah.
was fortunate enough to go inland and stay with for a little while with a friend who was a retired member of parliament. Lyttelton, we were there. That was good fun. Waiheke Island, I remember. Auckland, Napier, Bay of Islands, Nelson. I will say my favorite two golf courses in the world were there, Curry Cliffs and Cape Kidnappers. And I'm probably saying favorite because I scored so well there, which is unusual for me. But they were just out of this world golf courses.
So you got around more than I would have thought. It's not like a lot of cruise ships where you maybe dock, do a day excursion, and then buy a few things and then back on the ship. You really got to see it.
Absolutely. And it's nothing like a cruise ship in that way. And when we did dock at a big city, we would stay there 7 or 10 days. So you really got a chance to see the place.
What attracted you to the life in the first place?
Well, that's an interesting question. The way you worded it is interesting. Most people say, why did you go on the world? I saw an article about it in the Wall Street Journal years ago and wanted to get it out of my system. So we went on, and I thought it was the most ridiculous business model. I thought it was overpriced. Who would ever pay this much for apartments? And look how much the maintenance fees are. 2 days later, I was in the residential director's office saying, what do you have for sale? So I was hooked immediately.
Was that the people, by and large? Because that's a pretty short time frame to be persuaded otherwise.
It was kind of a trilogy. The people, the crew, and I barely got to know the crew or the people in that time, and the experience, and how otherworldly luxurious it was. I would say, I often say it's like the Four Seasons on steroids.
Okay, that gives us a bit of a picture. So you're made to feel welcome, essentially. That's part of the price of the ticket, as it were, isn't it?
Absolutely. And the crew is so seamless. I just can't tell you how wonderful they are. And not only do they make you feel welcome, and do they get to know you and know your preferences and your habits and things you'd like, but we also, almost everyone, develop personal friendships with the crew. Friendships to the point when we would dock somewhere, I might take somebody into town to go to a pub and have dinner, have some beers, whatever. Or if I'm going on a tour somewhere, I might invite somebody to come along with me. There was a fair amount of socialization between the residents and the crew, and the crew was always just incredibly gracious and wonderful.
Yeah, that's a big difference between the world and other cruise ships. I think you paid $1.5 million for that first apartment. That changed. And how big an apartment did you have later? Because I think your children came to stay with you at various times.
They did. They did. I ended up with a total of 4 apartments. Never 4 at once. Two at once. But they were generous 2-bedroom apartments.
So as with an apartment on land, you can renovate and decorate, can't you?
Yes, you can. This happened with me with a couch, actually, that I ordered. It was supposed to meet me in Miami, Florida, and it ended up chasing the ship all up the East Coast of the U.S. until I finally got it, I think, in North Carolina. So it is very complicated.
You'd never find tradespeople to do the work. You can't knock out walls, presumably.
Well, you can with approval, but that's another thing, Jim. When you talk about tradespeople, there's no hotel nearby. There's no Holiday Inn. So you have to rent an apartment for your workers, and you can't put them all in like in a dormitory. You can have the most is four in an apartment. So if you need to have eight workers, you're renting two apartments and you're paying, I don't know, $3,000 a night for those. And if they're doing work for 30 days times, $6,000 a night for the two, that's a lot of money just to house them.
Well, they say you need $15 million minimum to get on board, don't they? Peter Antonucci is talking to us about the world. He's owned four apartments on that ship, and he's now a best-selling author of luxury fiction, Billionaire's Paradise, Scandal at Sea, Billionaires in the Deep, and Tides of Betrayal. Those books. So you, in your books, there's a wealthy litigator, no surprise, called Eva Lampusida, or Eva Lampusada, who works with a group of women to make the dream of a mega yacht with wealthy passengers on board work socially and financially. In real life, would she succeed?
Yes, I think she would. It's a very difficult business model. The world itself was a very, it was a leap of faith. It almost went bankrupt after being at sea a handful of years because of a variety of reasons to do with the developer, the costs, whatever. And this was before I was on, and a few really, really indefatigable residents ended up buying the ship out. They each ended up with a number of apartments. So they obviously wanted to sell them because they didn't want to pay all that maintenance. But if not for for them and the forward-looking vision they had, the ship would have failed. And for that reason, I don't think anybody else can duplicate this.
Yeah, well, that's right. It's a singular niche. You obviously avoid, the too much scandal and debauchery. And I imagine a bit of it went on the world, but if there was a lot of infidelity, for example, Peter, it might tend to make life a bit tense and unpleasant on a ship, wouldn't it?
Oh, of course. I mean, I contrary to what's been printed in some of the magazines and newspapers, there was not a lot of infidelity. You've got a group of what, 130 people, 150, whatever it is. You're going to have a couple of people who are, doing naughty things. You have 100 people. Well, guess what? You're going to have a couple of people who have a drinking problem. You're going to have a couple of people who enjoy doing drugs more than they should. And you're going to have a couple of people who are acting outside their marriage. It's just the way it's going to be.
Yeah, exactly. Who decides where the world will go?
Well, it's a very complex process that it's done 3 years in advance. It's then given to the captain and his team because they've got to look at things like currents, bunkering, which is the purchase of fuel. And where crew can get on and off. You can't go to six cities in a row that don't have a big airport because you're going to have a problem getting crew on and off.
Right.
Food delivery is a big thing, all that. Then it's narrowed down to maybe, I don't know, six or seven itineraries. It goes to the itinerary committee. They then refine it and narrow it down to three. And then there's one glorious day that was always almost my favorite day of the year on the ship, where we all go into the auditorium and there's a big presentation with slideshows of where we could go starting in January 1st of whatever year it was. So if they were looking at it now, you'd be looking at 2027, I believe. Everybody got to vote and you voted, your votes were based on the amount of square footage you had on the ship. Did it get political? Yes. Did people campaign? Absolutely. People complained, oh, it's just like the US. People complained that the elections were rigged and this and that. But by and large, it was a good democratic process and it worked fairly.
Yeah, I can imagine that would be a fun day. The world also times its arrival at certain ports to coincide with big events, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. I remember being at, I think we're in South America for the World Cup. I know we were in London for Wimbledon several times, in Rio for Carnival several times, Sydney. For New Year's Eve, anchoring under the bridge. So it's frequently timed to coincide with a major world event. Yes. You know, you want to sit in the Queen's box, they can get you in the Queen's box. I mean, they can get you anything you want.
There won't be many people listening who could afford an apartment on the world, but there may be people listening for whom it sounds like the world might be a nice place to work on. So there'd be a decent sort of staff turnover, people are getting on board for jobs all the time.
It was not as big a turnover as you might imagine. For example, I was back on the ship this past October, and I hadn't been on in 4 years. And I don't think I saw more than six crew members I didn't know.
Gee.
And everybody came up to me and, "Mr. Antonucci, how are you? And how's your kid?" And they remembered my kids. They remembered them by name. It was unbelievable. So the crew turnover was not horrible.
When you regale your friends with, you know, real life tales from the deep, not from your books, but what happened to you, what were the highlights?
I loved when the ship brought on history experts and we went somewhere that had historical value. World War II, for example, we went to all the islands in the Pacific where major battles were fought. And we had war historians walk us through them, and those were great fun. Then there were like going to Solomon Islands, going to places that were so unexplored that were breathtaking. To me, what made things really special were the locations that people don't go, that you really can't get to.
Yeah.
Like, for example, when we went to Antarctica one time, we went from Ushuaia, Argentina, most of the time, but we did go down from New Zealand once, and we went through the Ross Ice Shelf. Well, I think only 140 people had been there in the year before. I think the statistic I heard was that 10 times as many people climbed the top of Everest that year than got to the Ross Ice Shelf. So it's unique stuff.
It's unique stuff. Getting back to the changing times, is it formal in the sense of dressing for dinner and being seen to wear the latest Gucci gear and the million-dollar Rolex or not?
Well, it was when I got on, and one of the things that was appealing was it had a country club atmosphere, and we loved getting dressed. I mean, I kept my tuxedos on the ship. I always had a closet full of fun jackets, really interesting clothes. It was fun. You were dressed, I'd say, 5 nights a week, not always in a tuxedo, of course, but you were dressed nicely. And from what I'm hearing from crew and from residents now, it's gotten a lot more relaxed. I kind of like the traditional formality of it when I got involved.
Yes. You obviously have purpose in your life and you like to try new things. What about some of the people on board? Do you think they consider their lives very useful, the long timers? There must be a few long timers.
There are long timers. There are people who have been on a handful of them since the ship was launched, which is over 20 years ago, almost 25 years. It's
Gee.
an aging trend for sure. I'm not in the business of reading other people's minds in terms of what they think of their lives. I think I'm presuming everybody who's on the ship enjoys being on the ship. Everybody has a reason for being on, whether it's the exploration and seeing different places, or whether it's purely the camaraderie and the friendship that one develops from being on the ship. Everybody has a reason, and none of them are the same.
No, that's true. But is there guilt? I mean, the world sails the sea while much of the world tries to keep its head above water right now. Did you ever sense that?
I don't think so. People who are on the ship, I think by and large, there's a fair amount of philanthropy. People who have the money are generous. I'd like to hope. I'd like to think. There was resentment when we went to certain ports. Of course, there was. You go into in some African countries, in South American country, or you go to Broome, Australia. You go to places where there's not a lot of money, and you sail in with this thing, and everybody's being driven around in private cars with guides and guards. Yeah, there's a certain amount of resentment.
Yes, that's not surprising. So you're happy in uni. You wouldn't go back on board on a full-time basis. You don't miss it.
I don't. I just I, you know, it's funny. I've been there, done that,
Yeah.
and I didn't like the way it was going. I certainly was there long enough that I could have stayed. I was on the board of directors. I chose to move on in my life. I often say that I reinvent myself every couple of decades, And I've done that now since I've gotten off with writing my books, and we're going to be doing TV treatment of it. And I've got another business that I'm involved in. So I try keep reinventing myself. It keeps me young.
Yeah, obviously it does. But it was a pretty important chapter in your life, and I guess it provided you with the material for all the books.
Well, the lawyer in me, of course, is going to say the books are total fiction and nothing is based on events or people and reality and all that. But they did inspire me. I mean, it says on the cover of the books, inspired by true events.
Yeah.
It's the only private residential ship in the world, and I've written about a private residential ship. So it is inspirational, but we're all, when one writes fiction, you can only write through your own eyes and your own experience. I can't write through the eyes of an 8-year-old girl in Uganda because I've never experienced that. So, you have to write to some measure your life experiences, even if you don't think you are, you are.
Yeah, of course. Final question. I mean, people are obviously back cruising in force, even though it was thought the pandemic might put an end to it all. That certainly hasn't proven to be true. And also, they're going, as you know, for the longer cruises, the 3-year cruises, the 9-month cruises, not on the world, but on other boats. That doesn't surprise you because obviously you got a lot of pleasure from the length of time you were at sea.
It does not surprise me. I have seen some articles, and I think I was quoted one or two, where these long 180-day cruises kind of blew up, where things didn't work, where they, in one instance, they didn't even secure a boat they
Yes.
had taken deposit. So, yeah, like any business, I think some of those ventures will succeed, some won't. I'm not surprised that people want to be at sea and travel for quite a long time. It's kind of fun putting everything behind you for a while.
It always is. It always is. Hey, thank you for your time. Well done on the contract for the televising of the books. Well done on the books as well. And thank you for being able to join us.
Thank you, Jim. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Peter Antonucci.